Oh yeah, so something really horrible. Actually, yesterday something really horrible happened.
Oh.
I went on Facebook for the first time in probably a couple months,
Oh,
and
wow.
I got an invite to my high school reunion.
Oh, whoa.
And I was like, wait, that happens every 10 years.
It's been 10
It's been
years.
10 years. So,
Mine's this year. Yeah. I'm an oldie. I know. Remy Michelle, am I right?
We're doing a podcast.
So, Michelle, I think we should do a podcast together. Welcome back. I'm excited.
Woo, I'm so excited.
Me too. Springtime's in the air, everybody.
Every time you say springtime, I think of the producer
Yeah,
song.
I just want to say it.
Springtime for Hitler
In
and Germany.
Germany. I know. Man.
God, Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. Not Hitler, Mel Brooks.
No, Mel Brooks.
I think I mentioned, unfortunately, mentioned Hitler in the last episode
God,
when you were talking about the
no.
wasp that hit you in the face.
That's not the target audience we want.
No, goddamn, no.
Salem and Binks were all about holidays and fun movies and
Festive parties, good times, celebrating.
laughs.
So many laughs. We're loving it.
And cats.
So many cats. Particularly Fiona, our producer. She's here, she's sleeping, she's loving every minute of it. Well, Ashleykins, I'm very excited because it is springtime.
It is. It's about how hot would you say it's in your apartment right now?
Too hot? Too
Yeah.
hot. So that's how hot it is. God, it's hot. But anyway, we're here. We're doing it. Today I will be your Salem.
And I will be your Binks. And today we will be discussing the classic Easter tale of Here Comes Peter Cottontail.
Yeah, not to be confused, of course, with Peter Rabbit.
No, screw that guy.
I know.
Yeah.
God, I love Peter Rabbit, though. Beatrix Potter forever. No, I thought, you know what? Let's make it crazy. We'll do something more random, a little offbeat, just because, again, this is the beginning. We're kind of trying stuff out here. And I thought, we'll do Peter Rabbit when we have a little more experience. Peter Cottontail, however, look at those googly eyes. He's right up our alley.
It's a movie. I think it's a movie for everyone.
Yeah, the movie is definitely for everyone. Our episode, we do have a little profanity, but
We do say a little poop here and there.
yeah, a little poopsie. But again, we just joke around. We have a good time. Again, nothing too vulgar.
This was such a fun movie, and I remember watching this movie when I was like little kid.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah.
I kind of remember it too. I just remember specifically that there was a like Rankin Bass Easter movie.
Right.
And I didn't know. I was like, oh, that looks like Rudolph puppets.
Yeah,
And you know, I don't remember the story at all, but I remembered like this Easter. I was like, yeah, we gotta do this. We gotta do Peter Cottontail.
Definitely.
So cute.
Definitely. Well, they did like three really bad like Frosty movies. They had
Of
to do at
course.
least one good Easter movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we'll definitely get into the specifics and the history of Rankin Bass. We're going to get into the plot here of Here Comes Peter Cottontail. And of course, we're going to begin, as we do, with the B.O.B.
The B.O.B.
The B.O.B. The back of box subscription, y'all.
You know why I love the B.O.B.?
Tell me, Ashley.
It takes me back to like at the time in Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Remember, and like when you got to pick your two movies on a Friday
Yeah. It
night
was
and
always like pick two. Maybe, was there some deal we didn't know about that our parents definitely knew about? They
oh
were like, you can pick
I'm
two.
yeah so, sometimes three.
Yeah,
There was sometimes three if you got a coupon.
Oh, yeah.
Do you say coupon or coupon?
I kind of say coupon, but I'm
Maybe
sorry.
I'm just trash.
Pecan, pecan, beacons.
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 Oh my God.
Anywho, I love reading the B.O.B. and I last week, Ashley Eakins got to read the B.O.B. So this time, the Neenster is going to take it, y'all.
Take it away, Neenster.
Here we go. Okay. Sorry for all the singing. Just apologize now.
But. We're so delusional because of the heat right now.
This is in Disney categories. This is at least heat one, you guys. We're struggling.
Oh, yeah.
In the words of John Van Ness, we are strugs to funk right now. So let's just, like, get through it. All right, guys. Here comes the B.O.B. of Here Comes Peter Cottontail. When Peter Cottontail tries to become Chief Easter Bunny, he's suddenly challenged to a contest by his arch-rival, Evil Irontail, and instantly finds himself to his ears in trouble. This delightful tale will leave you smiling as you watch Peter and his magical friend, Seymour S. Sassafras, race to distribute the most eggs on Easter Sunday. Approximately running time, 53 minutes.
Wow, that was great! That was incredible.
Thank you.
That was.
Thank you, thanks. I would
also like to point out, don't judge a book by its cover or judge a movie by its cover, because this is a stop motion film, but the
cover is like, let's make a two-dimensional cartoon out of Peter.
Like every movie ever.
Yeah.
But this is the stop motion that we've grown to love from Rankin Bass. So
yeah.
Don't be turned off by the cover.
Yeah, exactly. Just to get kind of like fun facts kind of out of the way before we totally jump into
fun facts.
It's our special segment of fun facts.
Oh God, I wish people could see your jazz hands right now.
Oh yeah, I totally did like fun. I did like jazz hands and like a head bop. So
it was great.
I got animated. Whiplash. I'm like, burr. I get too into it, guys. Yeah, we just want to throw out there, very initially, more jazz hands. This is a Rankin Bass production, and we will definitely cover more Rankin Bass productions as we go along the way, because they were known for their festive holiday films.
Nina, what kind of films did they make?
I'm so glad you asked. Oh boy, Rankin Bass produced some of America's most favorite stop animated holiday classics.
Well, according to the Wikipedia page, there's a whole section dedicated to the Rudolph era.
Oh yeah, they were known for doing all of these very festive, very holiday related movies, and they were all TV specials. That's where they're about 50 minutes. They're not sort of like feature length movie, 90 minutes or more. They're more 50 minutes. But they're all considered what they would have called in the company animagic. And that specifically relates to the movies that are stop animated, because they did do some like 2D cartoons like The Hobbit and stuff like that. But the animagic, again, is stop motion animation. And it was very much the style that was sort of reoccurring in all these movies. So they were doll-like puppet figures, and they were... as Wikipedia puts it, spheroid. They all had this specific look. Ubiquitous powdery snow using an animation technique. And we don't have to get too into that, but they would do cell animation, which is what two-dimensional animation uses a lot more. And that's, you know, where you have some things staying still and then the other layer on top is the one that's
moving. I did notice that mm-hmm. that happened a lot during this movie. It's such a beautiful movie, like aesthetically. It's so
like 60s, 70s.
It
kind of is nostalgic, and I think Rankin Bass stuff is something you have to grow up with to really love. I feel like if you never had seen any of it or grew up with it, and then you were to watch it as an adult, you'd be kind of like, oh, this is just like some weird 60s stuff. But there's some elements in there that just make it charming and nostalgic enough where you're like, oh, like the little puppets are cute and like kind of adorably cruddy and like they like can't move that well and all this stuff. It's again, this is that perfect example of what I say the fakery is the magic.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah, I love like seeing the shadows of the animators. I love seeing like all the little mistakes and the weird ways that they move. You know, like there's a reason that this looks like this and Nightmare Before Christmas looks like Nightmare Before Christmas. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Just so many differences in not only technological advancement, but budget, era, all that stuff plays a huge role into why this specifically looks the way that it does. And is styled the way that it is because it's very, very 60s.
It is very 60s.
Early 70s. This came out in 1971.
Just on the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer success. This is an Easter themed podcast, but the success of that movie really paved the way for this production company's future. Yes. And I think the success of the movie speaks for itself today. It's still shown on ABC. I think you have like a minimum 20 commercials during the like live telecast.
But, yeah. exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like we would not have Peter Cottontail if we didn't have Rudolph.
Would we have Tim Burton? I feel a lot of Tim Burton influences, especially the trippy scenes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Tim Burton saw this when he was a little kid and was like, yeah, I'm going to make that movie better and creepier. Yeah. And he did.
Well, that's what I love about stop animation. Like, when I was in college, I made a stop animated short.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Can you post it?
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Post it on the website. Guys, go to the website. Watch this movie. Yes. It's probably...
I totally, yeah, I should definitely share it with
you. I want to say it's probably one of my favorite films you made, just because the creative, it's so, so good.
Thank you, lady. Watch it.
Anyway, continue, sorry.
Yeah, no, I had so much fun with it. I did it literally just by myself for like a couple weeks. I just created all these little puppets, and I literally spent, I think, like $80 at the craft store and happened to make all this stuff with it, with a few things laying around, and I just put it together, and I had so much fun with it because I was inspired by Tim Burton, and I like kind of spooky stuff. And so when I made that, I did want it to be creepy. And stop animation is already creepy.
Yeah, it kind of is.
It really is, because it's kind of disturbing, because our mind is, and this is sort of what I mentioned a little bit in Darby when we talk about like Uncanny Valley and how things move, but then they're not moving the way that we want them to, or our brains want them to.
Like a Coldplay music video.
It's totally. Just, You hit the nail on the head with that one. But yeah, this is definitely like, I enjoy watching Rankin Bass stuff because it's weird and now conceit. It almost has like what I would call like the clown effect, which is like, and I'm sure there's a better term for that. I'm just sort of throwing that out there. But I'm referring to the fact that people enjoy clowns, not me, but people enjoy them. And then the mainstream... like collective mainstream has decided to turn on that. You know what I mean? Like for decades, clowns were seen as this delightful thing. Right. And then like in recent years, it's like clowns are so creepy, and we've turned them into like creepy monsters. And I could go on forever about like how something like clowns, which is like a humorous thing, can be in horror. And I won't have to do that so much here, but like, I will just say that a lot of like the modern generation will look at Rankin Bass, especially if they didn't grow up with it, and go, oh my God, creepy little puppets moving around.
Oh, you're so right.
Pastel colors, like what, like, ew. You know, there's just some, it's definitely from a different time. And the only reason it holds up is because people are nostalgic for it. And it's just interesting to me, like, because again, I try to look at every movie that we talk about on the podcast very objectively and just like step back and take away any like little personal thoughts or judgments they may have had.
Oh, I'm very judgy, but that's what makes me a big.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm a Salem and I just want to rule the world. I love it. So yeah, I try to look at it and go like, how do some people receive this movie and how do others? And I can see why people would look at this and be like, ew, creepy, no, they have basically googly eyes. And and there is definitely, we'll go into the plot, there's definitely moments where I'm like, I don't understand why this or that. But I can totally see why people just went, I watched it as a kid, I love it. Period.
Yeah, same.
You know what I mean?
Especially you can really appreciate the time and effort it took to make, because you've made stop motion, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If you move a hand too far,
you've
got to go back and,
It's so true. And mine, again, was straight up, like, I just had my own little setup. I did it in this little tiny set that I made. And I think it took me about a month to create everything and then 2 weeks to actually animate it. Oh, and it's about a 2 or 3 minute film. It's just a very short little thing. So yeah, I mean, amplify that by a 50-minute production, you know, and you're going to have you're going to have a team of people working on it, obviously. And you have like a TV budget, you know, it's not like big Hollywood.
You didn't go to Joanne's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's a huge amount of work, and any animation is, but I personally love stop animated, and I like it because it is weird.
Yeah.
Creepy, and I don't know. It's not that I'm like, oh, yay, I enjoy clowns. It's that I'm just like, I get it. That's creepy. I get it. And I think it's very useful. In fact, I would like to kind of put in my two cents and say that I think filmmakers, especially today, because every movie is just dipped in CGI and looks like shiny bullshit. And I really wish it's true, especially scary movies. And I'm like, hello, you could be using a little stop motion in one way or another to make things look disturbing, to make things look creepy, to kind of bring out the uncanny feeling that we could be experiencing. And I just feel like it's so underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. And what are your thoughts?
I grew up watching these type of movies, and it just kind of gets me in the mood for the holidays. Like, I really, when you said we're going to watch this movie, Here Comes Peter Cottontail, I was like, yeah, sure, Easter. But now it's like, God, I want to get eggs. I want to decorate eggs. I want a chocolate bunny.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. I love all that stuff
scene,
that they do.
Oh my God. The little sculptors. You know what I love more than anything?
Yes.
Is the Rankin Bass font at the beginning of the movies. Oh, it's so on point.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you brought that up, because like I literally wrote that in like caps. I just wrote Rankin Bass font. Like,
yes.
Because I'm just like,
hashtag moon. It's so good.
It's like its own weird thing that is very niche. It's like specific to them.
Yeah. I like it. And it takes me to this place of my childhood where it was just like, yes, it's
wacky holiday
season.
Time.
Yeah.
It's for some reason that triggers it too. And the credits are always written like that. It's just super wacky. It's like bizarre.
I love it. Okay. So when you hear Peter Rabbit's voice the first time.
Yes.
All I heard was Shaggy. Didn't you hear Shaggy?
Oh.
So Peter Cottontail is voiced by Casey Kasem. Do you know anything about Casey Kasem?
It's like one of those names that you hear and you know, but you can't remember the association.
Yes. Essentially, he was the original Ryan Seacrest. He hosted the American Top 40 every week.
Yes.
Until like Ryan took over in 2009-ish.
Oh, okay.
And that's when it became like Ryan's deal.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a huge radio personality. And when I first heard Peter Cottontail's voice in the very beginning,
brought it
like,
all back.
That sounds like Shaggy.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, and sure enough, Casey Kasem voiced Shaggy.
Oh,
from,
that's
of course, Scooby-Doo.
The best.
Yes.
I loved Scooby-Doo as a kid. I really loved the 70s as a kid. I don't know what my thing was, but I was like really about like Earth, Wind, and Fire was my favorite band.
Oh my God. Wow.
I don't
know. Huge nerd.
Yeah. Like, and I loved Scooby-Doo because it would come out on like Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, like spooky ghosts and monsters and like the gang is going to find out who they're up. And then after a while, it's like, it's always the creepy old man.
It's always the creepy old man.
Isn't it always the creepy old man?
Yeah. Oh, hashtag truth.
Hashtag for real, the truth.
Casey Kasem, huge American icon, American Top 40, which
Household
Ryan Seacrest
name.
Yeah, still hosts.
So cool.
So Seymour Saucefrass, our narrator.
Saucefrass?
Seymour Saucefrass is voiced by Danny Kaye.
The ultimate bestest ever.
Yes. You might be familiar with his work. Of course, he was in One White Christmas. And in this film, he also voiced Colonel Wellington B. Bunny.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know he did the other bunny, too. That's so cool.
And Antoine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
French Antoine.
So pretty well-rounded.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I didn't know he did Antoine's voice.
And he was in a bunch of other Rankin Bass films, obviously.
Oh, that's so cool.
And
I love that.
I absolutely love Danny Kaye.
Me too.
And it just hearing
his
voice.
If you want to ever study comedic timing, if you want to just study good acting, just someone who is a pure natural, someone who just has it down, confidence, you want a steady confidence, watch Danny Kaye. Anything with Danny Kaye.
His scenes in White Christmas with Bing Crosby and his reaction.
Yes.
It's just like that.
It's yeah. One of those things where the humor plays so well universally, like even to this day. Like you can watch White Christmas every year because of Danny Kaye. No offense to Bing Crosby, but he's like what keeps that movie in the 50s, and you watch it and you're like, wow, this is very old. Yeah. You watch Danny Kaye and you're like, I can relate. For some reason, it's like his performance that can sucker in anybody from any era and time period or generation because he's just so on point. He's such a
great performer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He keeps it organic. I love him.
And from what I've read of him, just an all-around awesome guy.
The best.
Which you would hope for, you know, someone like that. But yeah, Danny Kaye.
Danny fucking Kaye.
Oh, remember? My God, you know what that reminds me of?
Yes. Oh. It's like when Bing Crosby danced with Danny fucking Kaye.
Oh, that the was ultimate so best good. Line. So good. One of my, that's my favorite Christmas movie.
Oh, Christmas Vacation is so amazing. And John Hughes?
John Hughes.
Yeah.
The evil bunny in this movie.
Yes.
A bunny named Irontail, who's tail was crushed by a couple of children, which now he is out against.
Oh.
Yeah, he's completely against the children.
Okay, because I'm glad you said that, because I must have missed it, because I was just like, okay, so he hates children, and he hates colors, and he hates fun. If your tail got crushed, I get you, man.
Yeah.
Now he
wants to ruin Easter to get back at the kids, which I can get.
For a bunny, that's like the highest you can get.
At least it was his tail and not his foot.
Yeah, there you go.
So, gotta evil hop. Iron Tail is voiced by Vincent Price.
Jazz hands again.
Oh my God.
He's just the ultimate best villain ever.
Vincent Price really is. When you hear his voice, instantly it's creepy, it's spooky, it's all the things. And it's
maniacal and fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And just, if you have a chance, look at a picture of this guy.
Oh, of course.
He embodies this character.
Oh, I found a website. It's all about him, and it's great.
Oh, do you want to...
I'll post it.
Oh, please. Nina, you are the queen of spook, the queen of Halloween. Please, please, please tell me what you know about Vincent Price.
Oh, Vincent Price first of all, he's just an icon. And he's an icon in horror. And he's kind of an icon in, like, kitsch horror, you know, something like this, where it's like, oh, well, he's known to be a villain. We're going to cast him as the villain in this children's movie that's lighthearted and holiday and festive. So he would do stuff like this, like Peter Cottontail, but he would totally do things that were considered kind of scary and spooky.
Mm-hmm.
One movie that I've always loved with him in it, and it is especially now so campy, but at the time was probably not like super frightening, but was probably kind of spooky to people, was House on Haunted Hill.
Yes.
And when you watch it, it is like it's eerie and stuff, and the characters are very quirky. It's kind of like a campy version of the movie The Haunting, which came out in the 60s as well.
Mm.
And that was based on the book The Haunting of Hill House, which the show that just came out on Netflix is Hill House. That's also based on it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of been done several times before. They did it again in the 90s, and it was just like, in my opinion, like, kind of hard to watch. It was so bad. But the 1960s one is actually very sophisticated. There are some things in it that make it kind of like weird and hokey, but mostly it's directed really well. It's written really well. I mean, it holds up.
Awesome.
And then when you watch something like House on Haunted Hill, you know, it's kind of like a little bit of a campy knockoff version of that movie. But Vincent Price was in that, and he made that. Like, and you know what? Now that I think about it, that was very much like April Fool's Day, because he was sort of like playing people until it got real.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good. You got to see that.
Yeah.
It's totally classic. I have to rewatch it. It's been a couple years, but I just remember being like, Vincent Price is amazing.
He is. And he has that iconic, if you're not familiar with Vincent Price, He has this famous laughter. Mm-hmm. And he was the narrator for Michael Jackson's Thriller, of course.
Oh, yeah.
He was cannot also the evil character in The Great Mouse Detective, a Disney movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Oh, this is also a fun fact. Tim Burton obviously idolized him, having grown up watching him. I mean, he was like a master of horror, you know.
Edward Scissorhands.
Well, he was in Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
And he was also, before he made Edward Scissorhands, like years before, when he was kind of just getting started, he did a spooky stop animated short called Vincent about a young boy that looks like Tim Burton.
No way.
Yeah, you've never seen this?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay. It is the coolest. I will post it. It's what inspired me to make my stop animated short.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
It is spooky, it's short, it's great, and it's called Vincent. And it's about a young boy who's just this little suburban kid, obviously looks like a young version of Tim Burton.
Uh-huh.
And he's inspired by like evil arch nemesis and obviously Vincent Price. And it's basically going into his imagination about what it would be like to be, like, a villain.
Oh, my God. That's
and
so
then
cool.
Vincent Price narrates it to top it all off.
Oh, my God.
It's incredible. It's, like, from the 80s. It's, like, when he was just getting started out doing his own thing and kind of branding himself as, like, the spooky stop animated guy. Like, it is just so good. I've got to share it.
You please post that.
Yeah.
His last... major film was Tim Burton's Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the inventor in that.
And then he passes away in that movie.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It's the way he would wanted, though.
Pain and discomfort. Every time I'm feeling sick, I think of Vincent Price saying, pain and discomfort.
Oh, so true. All right, so one last character I think that is significant we should really... mention here is the voice of Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yes, so he played Santa Claus in all the different Rankin Bass films. So Paul Frees is the voice of Santa Claus. He also voices a couple other characters. Colonel Wellington's assistant, a couple of the background characters as well. And he's known as, in Hollywood, as the man of a thousand voices.
Oh.
And just, I mean... voiced things from Rocky and Bullwinkle, a ton of different Disney movies.
That's so
and
cool.
And you can still hear his voice today. He's the voice in The Haunted Mansion at Disneyland and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh my God, girl.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So you have heard this man's voice before.
Yeah.
Ton of different movies.
I love that.
Not very significant roles in this film, but if you've watched Rankin Bass before, you've heard his voice.
Yeah.
And if you've been to Disneyland, you've heard his voice. I just thought that was a fun little fact. So that's kind of it with the fun facts of the actors. Do you want to dive into the plot of this movie and just kind of
let's
rip it apart?
Let's get into it. Yeah. Let's just go to town. We're going all the way, folks, to April Valley, the village of Bunny Trail. And we're taken there immediately by Danny Kaye's character.
Seymour Saucefross.
Saucefross. Mr. Saucefross. And and it's very much like, and we'll compare several times in this movie, it's very much like Santa Claus is coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
They just did it with Fred Astaire in that movie.
Yeah.
They were like, let's make a puppet that looks like Fred Astaire. We'll have Fred Astaire narrate it. He'll be like, hey, it's Christmas. And same thing, hey, it's Easter.
Yeah.
Oh, what? You've never heard of so-and-so? Or
Danny Kaye, discount Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
So we're in April Valley, and this is where all the Easter bunnies work, and they prep for the big day.
This
and
is their town.
The prep for Easter is incredible.
It's amazing. I want to live there so bad. Just awful pastels everywhere. And the ultimate greatest career that I would want to have as an Easter bunny is to be a chocolate bunny sculptor.
It was so freaking cute. They have like actual artists like carving into sides of chocolate to make these bunnies. It was so cute.
Precious.
It was so cute. And then they have like the
assembly. And they have the best names. Leonardo da Bittersweet?
No!
Oh, and let's not forget Milk Chocolate Angelo.
Oh my god, that's precious. I forgot about that.
If Leonardo da Bittersweet is not handling the cake at your wedding, I'm not your bridesmaid. Just saying.
We'll get him, Nina. We'll get him.
We're going to hire him.
Yes.
Leonardo.
Grab him by the tail.
Oh. It's the cottontail.
Oh my gosh. There's an assembly line of the bunnies painting the eggs. Very so efficient.
Yeah. Hey. They're following Disney standards, yes. Guys. It was very well
Those
done.
Those bunnies are good at multiplying.
And then they bring up, this is so weird. He briefly says something like, then there's the bonnets, bunny bonnets or something, which is just a hat making. Sorry, excuse me.
She's going through puberty. Sorry, yeah. Guys.
I keep forgetting to ask that girl to the dance. The third time. they bring up this weird, like, bonnet making, like hat making.
And for then your Easter basket?
It's like your Easter hat. Is that, maybe it's like a 60s thing to have, like, you know, like the hats they wear in like the Queen's Garden
like
party?
Like in Southern churches, they have like the big Easter hats. Yeah. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, you know what?
Listeners.
We're Californians. Yeah. So this is not our thing. We're just going to say that.
Listeners, if you've ever received an Easter bonnet or an Easter hat, please.
Oh, let us know.
Let us know.
Give us the deets on that cultural custom.
Please take pictures of your Easter bonnet. Yeah. I want to see what an Easter bonnet looks like, because the one in the movie, she talks.
Yeah. And at first I was totally like, what in the hell is that about? And then I thought, oh, it'll never come up again. And of course it does much later. But I love that it's like, they're kind of like Doris Day hats, where they just look like trash cans on everybody's head.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yes.
Like if you're like, I had a bunch of Doris Day movies growing up. Love Her Come Back, all those ones. And she always, like, she was like the same person in every movie. She's just that, what would now be the Lifetime movie. Like the hardworking woman who don't need no man, but then like falls in love. And
Like every Hallmark movie ever.
Oh yeah. No, Doris Day is the OG. She would do these movies with Rock Hudson, and she'd always fall in love with Rock Hudson, and it was like, she always had...
Oh my god, yes!
And she'd always have trash cans on her head.
Yes!
It was like, honey! And she'd always be like a designer, or like some really successful career. And, you know, it was very much like the 60s being like, women are going this way, but don't forget you can fall in love and have a man take care of you. Like, it was like a little bit of like, it's kind of a good thing, but then kind of a not good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like...
Shoot for the stars, but not too far.
Yeah. Exactly. Because then you'll just be a frigid bitch who works too hard. You don't want to be her. She has trash cans on her head.
Don't be a Sally.
Yeah, exactly.
Be a Tina.
Yeah. And then, of course, it's just the 60s. So then even when she ends up happily ever after, she still has trash cans on her head. You know? So these bonnets are the same thing, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That's all I can guess. And it's just so random. That's what's going on in April Valley, y'all.
I liked this one part, how Peter Rabbit fibs sometimes.
Yes! It was in that Pinocchio complex.
It was like, I haven't heard the word fib.
I know.
It was like
adorable.
Elementary school.
And yeah.
So every time Peter Rabbit fibs.
So cute.
His ear flops over, which is like a little, like, bloop.
Nope. A little baby. I love that.
And then, of course, the super, super charming song, Here Comes Peter Cottontail.
Yeah, it kicks it off.
Yeah.
It kicks it off. It makes you get excited for Easter.
And I remember my dad singing that song on Easter, like, when I was a little kid.
Aww.
So he must have watched it when he was a little kid. And it's like, Here Comes Peter Cottontail.
So cute. That's why we love the holiday.
Bunny trail. It'll be really stuck in your head.
Yeah, it's like the song from Darby. You're going to sing that around that time of year, you know, when leading up to that holiday. That's the song that's going to be in your head, and you're just going to love it. It's cute.
Absolutely.
Gotta love it. I love it, love it. I was just going to say, I find it funny, again, how many similarities this has to Santa Claus Coming to Town. Like I mentioned, it's like, instead of Fred Astaire, it's Danny Kaye. So you have that introduction where they're always like, you mean you don't know Peter Cottontail?
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's right.
They always do, you don't know where Santa Claus came from?
Oh, that's such good, I love good framing for a story.
Even in Rudolph, Burl Ives is like, you don't know the story of Rudolph? And it's like, no, I don't know, and that's why I'm
know.
Here. You gotta tell me.
Famous
voiceover actor, you tell me now. Anyway. I think it's funny, too, because in Santa Claus is Coming to Town, they also have the Burgermeister. And he's, like, Do you remember that? And he's super pissed, and he hates kids too, because he like tripped on a toy. And so then he's like, no toys, no colors, no fun. So
is everyone in a Rankin Bass, like in every movie they do, children. They have to have someone with an outrageous accent.
Yeah. And then they just hate fun.
Yeah.
Just so upset. And then they always have a song about responsibility. Just to have it.
So we kind of set up what April Valley is like. Well, Colonel Wellington Bee Bunny is the current Chief Easter Bunny, which you know he got that part because of old money. Old Bunny.
Oh, he
passed it down.
He earned status the old-fashioned way. Yeah. He just had it. He inherited it.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Snap, 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 snap.
So he's retiring and he wants to give his crown to the next Easter Bunny. And so he decides he's going to give it to Peter Cottontail. Mm-hmm. Well, Irontail proposes a contest. We will see who can deliver the most eggs on Easter, and whoever delivers the most eggs, they get to be the Easter Bunny.
Yeah.
Well, this should all work in favor for Peter Cottontail because he is a hardworking bunny.
He's definitely fit for the job.
Irontail is evil. Irontail,
he hates kids and colors and fun.
Okay, can we talk about Irontail? His preferred mode of transportation is flying on a bat.
Oh yes, the bat is, what's the bat's name? Montrezar.
Montrezar.
Yeah,
it's wild. So Peter Cottontail just has to wake up early in the morning to deliver the most eggs, but
wake up one morning, Peter. It's not hard.
Peter Cottontail is a bunny after our own hearts. He has a little party after.
He's just like me. He is a night owl. He doesn't want to wake up early. He has a party instead the night before
with a bunch of little bunnies.
Yeah,
all
the girl bunnies of April Valley.
Yeah,
the chick bunnies.
You know what they say about those bunnies?
Springtime. He wants to get some cottontail, so.
Yeah.
He had that party.
This is a children's movie.
This is for children. When they show the party, they just show a silhouette of little bunnies dancing in a circle. But you don't really see, like, the inside much.
No, I want to know what's going inside.
It's called being on a budget, but still.
Yeah, what's a bunny party like?
In the spring.
That silhouette was very suggestive.
Yeah.
I imagine.
They were very close to each other.
Yeah. Leave some room for Jesus.
Yeah. It's Easter after all.
And Peter Cottontail doesn't wake up on time. In fact, he sleeps the whole day through.
He does. And that is because of Irontail.
You want to tell what that jerk Irontail did, Nina?
That bitter Irontail decided to sneak into his tree hole, which sounded really bad, but that's where he lives.
His bunny hole? No, that's not right either.
It's a hole in a tree. Oh, it's so wrong. He sneaks in there, and he disables the alarm clock rooster. You could have an alarm clock or a rooster, but to ensure that one would wake up on time, Peter Cottontail has an alarm clock rooster. And in a strange coincidence of things, Irontail happens to have the ability to silence the rooster. So every time the rooster says, crook-a-doodle-doo, instead, like, because he gives him some kind of magic bubble gum, it blows bubbles where the cook-a-doodle-doo goes up so high in the air, and then you can't hear it from below.
Because it pops, and it's carrying the cook-a-doodle-doo, but it's all the way
far away. So
you have to watch the movie, guys.
God damn it, watch it, because what in the hell is this? That is the first moment in the movie where I'm like, okay, everything's kitschy and cute, and then I'm like, this was really, like, thought out. Like, somebody, you had to be doing something to be thinking in
Baby Tim Burton saw this and was like, well, can't use that anymore.
Yeah. Some dark shit. Yeah, this is very creative is the best way to describe this movie.
So the role of Easter Bunny goes to Irontail, who declares that all the Easter eggs will be two colors. God, what were the colors? I mean,
they were like the colors of mud.
It was like the colors of mud and the colors of death.
Just, it was like black and brown and
black and brown.
Not festive. And everyone wants colorful stuff.
And instead of Easter bonnets, you'll get Easter galoshes.
Yeah.
Which is just not fun.
Just take all the fun out of Easter and all the cuteness out of Easter. And he decides to just destroy it. And that's because he could go out and deliver eggs while Peter slept in the whole morning. And yeah. He only delivered one egg, but that's still one more than Peter Cottontail got to deliver.
And so Peter Cottontail is so shamed from letting down his community of bunnies. He runs away.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs all through the night and he falls asleep and wakes up on good old Danny fucking K's
random garden that he has. Yeah, he sleeps on his foot. He wakes up on his feet.
Which is kind of biblical.
I was just going to say, is that... I feel like there are biblical undertones.
I fell asleep during Sunday Club, so I wouldn't know. Sunday Club.
Not this Sunday Club. It was strange.
Yeah, so Danny Kaye's garden. I mean, not Danny Kaye.
Yeah, we could call him Sassafras. Okay,
so Sassafras's garden is super... I mean, this puts Willy Wonka's chocolate factory to shame.
Yeah, I mean, he plants plants that come out to just be different things. At least Willy Wonka was like, I know what I'm making. This is like,
yeah.
Here's a garden. I don't even know what the hell's in it. Like,
yeah, he's like, I'll plant tomatoes over here and it comes up pumpkins.
Yeah. I just very odd.
There's one point in the garden which I thought was really charming mm-hmm. is he gets a can of paint or something. Yeah. And it's blue paint, and then he writes blue on the side of the can, and then it turns orange. And it's just like, it's weird. It's just...
And his role, according to him, says he deals in magic and moonbeams and pretty, pretty colors.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. I want that as like my bio everywhere.
Yeah. New Insta bio.
Yes. Yes.
So he, as Ashley put it, he... provides the color wholesale for April Valley and the Easter eggs. But that's so funny. If he wrote one thing on the can and then it changed color, it's like he's like their color provider, but then the colors all get mixed and matched. And
hey, it's what happens when you buy wholesale.
I think Sassafras is colorblind is what I'm thinking is going on with him.
Took a little too many hits off of the Sassafras.
Kind of really sassy. That's for sure.
It's in the best interest of Sassafras that Peter Cottontail becomes the Easter Bunny because he has all these colors he needs to get rid of.
It's just about his business, so, really.
Yeah, no, he's really selfishly driven. Yeah. It's all about the money.
He tries to act like he's Peter's friend, but this is all about his wholesale.
It's all about the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, he business can't suffer. Christmas, they only want two things.
Yeah.
Red and green.
Boring.
Yeah.
Easter, give me the rainbow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So... he lends Peter Cottontail his time machine.
Oh, so convenient.
Yeah.
If you want to go back to Easter, you just hop into this thing, right? And not only does he happen to have a time machine, he happens to have a
pilot for this time machine.
Which is a caterpillar?
It's a centipede. Caterpillar?
Worm.
When you first see it, you see a head. It looks like
a
human.
I thought it was either a person or like going to be a penguin.
Yeah, but then you see the body and it's...
Yeah, it's like disturbing. A centaur of a person and a caterpillar.
Yeah, a centaur of a person and a caterpillar.
I don't know what that would be called, but that's what exactly that is. And he happens to be super French.
Oh, yeah.
And his name is Antoine. And he's stereotypically French.
Yeah, super passionate. Let's cut out my accent.
Yeah. It's like you want to go back in time, no?
Nina will now host this podcast in a French accent.
Oh, Antoine, my homie.
So he takes Peter into the time machine, and they go back in time.
They're rocking and they're rolling.
Unfortunately, this cannot be a 20-minute movie, so they go back to the wrong time.
Have to create some conflict, which, I gotta say, is not where I thought this plot was going.
No.
I was expecting, like, okay, so he failed. He has a year to train. Where's that training montage? Like,
no, he gets it handed to him. He ran away from his problems, and then he got an answer in his lap.
Yeah, you know what? I was expecting, like, I don't know, maybe like a Gladiator-esque plot to happen. Like,
calves.
Oh, yeah, definitely calves. I wanted a training montage. I wanted like, oh, I failed, but I'm coming back around. You're going to see me next year. And you're not going to expect to see me.
Business.
And we're going to defeat the Huns.
To defeat the Buns.
Yes.
Yay.
Oh my gosh. So, no, that's what I thought would happen, but this totally didn't happen. But fun fact.
I love fun facts.
Fun fact. So this is based on a book, this movie, is based on the book The Easter Bunny That Overslept by Priscilla and Otto Friedrich. So it's the same plot as the movie. The bunny oversleeps. He realizes he couldn't deliver the eggs, so then he kind of waits for each holiday to roll around to try to deliver the eggs, and nobody wants them because it's not Easter.
Yeah.
And then by the time it gets to Christmas, he's able to give them out at least as gifts, and then Santa gives him an alarm clock so that it will help him wake up.
Aw, that's cute.
So, but no, as far as I know, no Iron Tail rooster bubblegum situation, no Sassafras, and no Antoine. So
no Antoine.
No Antoine.
So the first holiday they end up landing in, which they literally crash through a calendar.
Which I didn't get. I mean, you could get it because you could see like the camera zooming in on a calendar, which I thought they're just trying to let us know what day it is. But then they literally crash through what I thought was a notepad in the sky.
Yeah.
You can't describe this stuff. You got to watch this crazy shit. Like,
It was weird. It felt like the producers, and this is totally speculation, the producers didn't trust that kids would understand that they're in a different day.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we have to crash through
for children.
A giant calendar. Yeah.
The calendar that hovers over the sky every day.
Which I somehow miss in my day to day, but maybe I'm just,
it's very helpful.
So they land in Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And so poor Peter Cottontail tries to give out his eggs. Unfortunately, Mom's like, hell no. Like,
they're very upset.
I'm not taking your eggs. Where were you on Easter?
Yeah, they were like really mad about it. They were bitter.
And Mom said, I didn't get my Easter bonnet. So maybe it's a mom thing, the bonnets.
Maybe it's
like a grandma thing. I'm thinking it has to be.
It's got to be something.
It has to be like a church.
It's
Sunday
a church. It's, maybe
thing.
It's a church. That's what I was saying. Is like it's the kind of hats you wear to like the Queen's Garden Party. It's like those big, like Southern, like what you would wear in the South on Sunday to church. And you're a grandma.
That must be it.
You have to be all those things.
As you were talking about it, my 666 tattoo started burning. So
perfect.
It must be it.
It's got to be a church thing. So,
Damien. They go to the 4th of July. He tries to give his eggs to some brats, and they're like, no, man, we want fireworks.
Yeah, they just
like,
wanted to blow shit up.
God, I hate kids.
They were like, this is America, let's blow shit up.
Yeah.
Like,
and then there's that weird, when Antoine goes into the improvise dance, like, which is like the first like improv song like ever.
Yeah,
like,
it was very strange, and it was like, you
very
don't even
French.
Have, like, yeah, it was very, very French.
There was the naked worm things. It was very trippy.
The other trippy part was like the whole song that took place while they just showed you constellations in the sky for no reason. And then there were shapes of holiday related things.
Right. Constellations that don't really exist either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It just was like, I don't know what that is. And then again, going back to Santa Claus is Coming to Town, it reminded me of that other random song for no reason, no plot purpose, and trippiness all around was the song that the woman Jessica sings in that movie. The one who, like, of course, becomes the love interest for Santa Claus. Like, she just randomly just like has this song.
Oh, that's the worst song.
Any song in a musical that does not serve a plot purpose is the worst song of any musical.
I bring you cats.
Yeah. Any, seriously, like, I mean, look at, like, and I'm not bashing because I absolutely love, but, like, look at Wizard of Oz. Perfection, however, as much as I absolutely love, it's, like, one of my all-time favorite movies, the song where the lion sings about being the king of the forest.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely not a highlight. I thought you were in, like, the song that over the rainbow, it just... What the hell? Like,
no, because in a musical, the whole purpose of a musical is that the song highlights a change in plot. It highlights, like, when you start a song, you're not the same at the end of the song that you were at the beginning of that song. Songs are supposed to move the story forward, but when you have a song that you can tell, like, your gut is just like, this song sucks and I just want to skip it, it's because it doesn't serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rankin Bass has a lot of these sometimes. Like, it's like Silver and Gold from Rudolph. It's like, I guess we sang about the colors silver and gold. Anyway, back to Rudolph. Like, yeah. It's just, like, so pointless. I mean, you know, it's one of, everyone likes that song because it's like a fun classic.
They needed some filler.
But it's, story-wise, those moments are filler.
They end up in Halloween Town, which...
So fun.
The evil witch gets a call from, obviously, the evil Iron Tail.
Yes.
She's like, hell yeah, I'll stop this little bunny for you.
Yeah.
Like, want to come over for a Sunday roast? Like, they're old chums. Yeah. Like, they go way back.
Totally.
And
she's not very threatening, but,
no,
you know.
She's not. And,
it's for kids. So she goes to scare Peter Cottontail, and he's just, like, not even remotely afraid of her. He just sees her as another friend. Like, he's not judgmental or terrified. He's just like, oh, you're laughing, I'll laugh too. And she's just like, I'm supposed to be scary to you. So eventually they become friends, and he actually is going to give her some eggs, again, trying to get rid of these eggs. And she's like, oh, these are great. It's a gift for me. And then she goes, I'm going to contact the entire weirdo community and try to get them to get eggs too. And I loved that. I was just like, yes, citizens of the weirdo community, unite.
Unite.
Oh my gosh. I love, like, hashtag weirdo community.
Join our Sunday club.
Yes, the Sunday club.
So another cute line in the Halloween section is when Peter presents the eggs to the witches. They get shocked and they say this super sweet part. They say, nobody thinks to treat the tricksters. And
that's,
I just
so
loved
cute.
That. It was just like, it reminded
that's just
me
a
of
good
us.
Line.
It's just like, yeah.
We're, yeah. I like that.
We're tricksters, but we like our treats too.
It's charming and festive.
Yes.
I liked that.
I love that a lot.
Yeah. So they just, like, become buds. But then, just as Peter Cottontail is going to give her an egg, Maltazar comes flying down to take away the eggs because, meanwhile, back at the ranch, guys, Iron Tail has been able to spy through some kind of egg-looking glass on the entire events unfolding for Peter Cottontail, even while time-traveling. So he knows that, like, he's trying to get back to Easter or go forward to Easter or whatever, but he's trying to sabotage him along the way.
We ultimately end up in Thanksgiving Town.
He just goes around and he stops at, like, a family, and they're just like, we're stuffed and we don't want anything. So every single holiday, he's just struggling to get rid of these eggs because people don't want them for whatever reason.
But maybe Christmas. Maybe Christmas will want them for a present. A stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
Of course, all the streets are bare on Christmas Eve because everyone's home with their families. And poor little Peter Cottontail herds a cry in the distance.
Yeah,
and it's
weeping.
It's Bonnie Bonnet.
Bonnie Bonnet. So again, the hats that we never understood, they're making a comeback. They weren't just pointless. They did bring them back. And the hat is a character.
Bonnie Bonnet apparently left April Valley to pursue a life in the big city.
Oh!
but no one bought her.
Oh.
Isn't that sad? So she stayed alone in the hat shop.
Sad.
So.
She like the Mary Mags of this story? Like
she might be. Antoine and Peter Cottontail, they go and rescue her.
And they negotiate with the shopkeep. And she says, yeah, sure, I'll take those eggs. Like, she's like, yeah, they'll be decorations or something.
Yeah.
She's excited about it, which is cool. But then, of course, Iron Tail steals them right off the street. Flying on Maltazar's back. Because that's what villains do, you know. Just Green Goblin that shit. Just swoop down and...
And
cause
what is
trouble?
What does Peter Cottontail do?
He gets in the frickin' time machine without Antoine.
He leaves Antoine in Christmas Town.
How could you?
And poor Antoine is stuck in the snow alone.
I know.
Wingless, because he's just a caterpillar. And Bonnie Bonnet and Peter Cottontail fly off after their eggs.
There's a part when they enter Christmas Town. or Christmas Day or whatever. Peter Cottontail says something like, oh, I'm just so cold. And then Antoine says something like, oh, thank you for this information. I was not aware how cold it was. And then he sneezes and I'm like, is that Antoine trying to be sarcastic?
I think that is sarcasm.
I think so too.
Oh my God, I'm totally going to use that next episode. What's it called? I'm like, wow, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that information. So the next holiday is Valentine's.
Yes.
So Valentine's, he meets a bunny named Donna.
Isn't that cute? And Donna asks Peter for help with her skate to get it on her foot.
So flirty and cute.
But then did you notice this? He helps her with one, like, getting the skate on her foot. And then they start talking, they start chatting. And she easily puts on the second skate, yeah, like, super quick. It's like, girl, I see you.
Girl.
I get that.
Honey.
Swoop down in and get him.
Yeah. She's like, oh, there's a cute bunny up in here. Oh my gosh.
It wouldn't be a Rankin-Bass film without a love interest.
Yeah, she's the Clarice of this film.
Mm.
Clarice as in Rudolph.
Starling.
Not Clarice Starling from... And Iron Tail is the Buffalo Bill, obviously. Was she a great big fat person? Yes, sir. Yes, she was. I'm delirious.
It's the heat.
It's the fucking heat.
They're in Valentine's Day town, which...
I think we keep saying they're in, like, this town, and it's like, just on that day.
Yeah, so they're... Now it's Valentine's Day.
But it feels like...
A different town. It's like, you know what? I imagine the trees in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Exactly.
Nina, I have a question to ask.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what happens to the eggs when they're in?
Yeah, I got you. So after Peter arrives in Valentine's Day town, hangs out with Donna, they skate, they have a song, because obviously. It's cute. He's kind of like falling for Donna. And even he was like, do you want one of these eggs? And she was like, yeah, sure. They're cute. And basically she puts it down in the basket of eggs. And while they're dancing and skating and singing, Iron Tail comes and dyes the eggs green. Like through and through green.
Yeah.
Like green eggs and ham green. And so then nobody, not even Donna, wants that egg afterward. And it's definitely like the low point in the story. And it's just like, oh man, like what's going to happen now? And then things kind of don't make sense for a minute. There's a song yet again. And it's just like a montage of Peter Rabbit giving out Easter eggs to all the people who rejected them. So I'm kind of like, is it a dream?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's that point in the movie where you just gotta hang on and hope it makes sense. And that the montage never really...
It just doesn't... Yeah, it's like very out of the unity of the story. It doesn't make sense. It's like, is he just like, this is him visually regretting or that no one took his eggs?
Is it the producers trying to fill an hour and a half time slot on television?
It's a strange scene. We're going to leave it open to you guys because they don't really explain it. I mean, maybe they do and we missed it, but I didn't really understand how any of that made any sense.
So he takes these green eggs and he goes to St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
Land, place.
Land, place, day.
And of course the Irish want their green eggs.
Yes.
It's the hit of the parade.
The Irish love their protein. Eggs are part of an Irish breakfast.
So Peter finally gives away all of his eggs.
It's a St. Patrick's Day miracle and an Easter movie.
Huzzah.
Oh, so cute.
So...
And he's wearing, like, a little leprechaun outfit.
Oh, it's adorable.
Fresh.
And he goes back to April Valley and...
becomes the chief Easter bunny. And it's adorable. and it's cute, and all the little bunnies are so happy.
They're so happy. All the bunnies are just...
Because fun is allowed again, and colors are allowed again, and it's exciting, and it's a wonderful, beautiful time. And then Donna comes back.
Donna!
Donna the bunny, and she's like, hi.
Yeah.
I missed you.
Can you imagine that after party, though, when... Peter becomes the Easter Bunny. I mean,
he already had a ballin' party the night before he thought he was gonna become the Easter Bunny. Oh. I can't imagine the bash that took place afterwards.
It was quite something.
Oh, and Antoine comes back.
Oh, but he's not the creepy little caterpillar anymore. He's a beautiful butterfly.
Oh, and then he had wings to fly back into...
Yeah.
To fly
back into time?
Time and space are relative in this movie.
It's enjoy the movie.
Yeah, they're interchangeable.
Yes. We have a drinking game at the end of this that might make more sense of this timeline. I just want to say the little Bonnie Bonnet.
Oh, yeah.
The little Bonnie Bonnet finds a home. Peter, when he is making his amends and he's passing out the Easter eggs, gives Bonnie Bonnet to the bitter mother who didn't enjoy her Mother's Day with her children. Remember her?
Oh, yeah. She was like, get your fucking eggs out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want your
Mother's
eggs.
Day.
It's my day. The kids made me breakfast, but I have to make the dishes.
It just never ends, does it?
It never ends. What are your final thoughts on this movie?
So my final thoughts, I did not expect this to be what it was. Like I said earlier, I was just expecting it's going to be purely Easter themed. Mm-hmm. I thought there's going to be, like I said, training montage, you know, hero story. He's going to come back again a year later and face his arch nemesis who did not expect him to return, you know, that kind of thing. Wasn't that at all, but I was kind of pleasantly surprised because it involved all these other holidays and all the tropes and the cheesy things of each holiday and some odd stereotypes as well. Because, of course, but I did find it to be very Rankin Bass. Very weird and, yes, trippy and, yes, oddly creative, but it's enjoyable. And it does get you excited for Easter because it's festive and cute and there's bunnies and...
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's be real, favorite part is the chocolate sculptor.
Yes!
I gotta have a chocolate bunny watching this movie. That's the food pairing.
Yes!
So good. So good.
God, it's worth it just for that scene.
What are your final thoughts on Here Comes Peter Cottontail?
So, you suggested this movie we were gonna watch, and I'm so glad we watched this movie instead of Passion of the Christ. It's this...
it was a dilemma.
It was a real toss up, but I'm glad we went with this one. It had a lot less Mel Gibson, which I like.
Anything with less Mel Gibson is probably the best of choices. Yeah. So,
but it's kind of like what you said. It got me in the mood for Easter, and I have not thought about coloring eggs in such a long time.
Yeah. Well, Seymour Sassafras, king of colors, is going to get you into it.
Could he hook me up with some color?
He's the king of wholesale. He got you, girl.
Can you imagine him on, like, a cheesy, like, commercial? It's like the 1-800 number flashes at the bottom.
His color factory has those, like, inflatable, car sales things. Out in the front.
The blow-up dancing dolls. Yeah.
colors of all kinds.
Call Sassafras right now, Sassafras. At 1-800-SASSAFRAS.
We may or may not be sponsored by Seymour Sassafras.
But this was such a cute movie, and it really did get me in the spirit, which is what we're about on this podcast.
Yeah. We just want to not only look at movies that get you in the spirit for a holiday, but movies that used to get you in the spirit when you were a kid and you kind of revisit those memories and those little visual cues, you know? It's kind of fun. So I was definitely glad to watch this one. Well, like we mentioned, we like to always throw in a Salem and Binks present drinking game. Ashley, I want you to kick it off. What do you got?
All right. I want you to take a drink every time someone paints an egg.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good. Yeah, because I always have to repaint the eggs for each holiday, pretty much. Yeah, so, oh, girl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I put take a drink every time they tear through the sky calendar.
Yes.
Because I thought it was a giant legal pad in the air. Is it a notepad?
That'll get you good and lit. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Take a drink every time Peter Cottontail sounds like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Where you just immediately are
just
reminded.
Like, yeah, you're like, oh, God, that's Shaggy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, oh, it's Shaggy. Gotta take a drink.
I like it. Take a shot every time you hear Maltazar.
Yeah.
Wait.
Take a shot.
That's shot worthy.
Ah, Vincent Price. Classic.
God, I love him.
Classic. Take a shot every time you see a bunny without clothing.
Oh.
Which I think happened like maybe once or twice. Not too often.
Oh, okay. They're mostly in clothes.
They're, of course. Okay. They're civilized in April Valley.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely take a sip or a shot.
Let's say a shot.
Okay. I was going to say, anytime someone rejects an egg, take a drink.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's
anytime a good someone one. Is like super rude about it too, take a sip. I always try to find some weird sequence in the movie where you just have to chug your drink during that moment. I'm choosing the end potential dream sequence where he gives eggs to the people that rejected them earlier, but now he's just happened to be giving them eggs in a montage. And it's never explained. So
the unexplained montage chug.
Just... You got questions? Take a sip. So just chug your drink during
that's
that.
That's a good one. You got questions? Take a sip.
Yeah. You got questions. I had a lot of questions the whole time. This was a wonderfully
this
strange
This was a
movie.
Great movie. Ina, bravo. Great pick.
Hey, girl. Bravo to you for getting these great drinking game ideas. And bravo to you for watching it.
Bravo to me.
I want to sign off by thanking my big brother and our big sponsor, Bijan Sharifi.
Woo.
Woo. Check out his website, bijansharifi.com. I always post a link. And I want to thank our producer, Fiona, who has been sleeping for 90% of this episode.
Woo. You might have heard her chewing in the background.
Feel free to follow us on Instagram, on Pinterest, and on Facebook, and it's Salem and Banks. You can find us through all those. Don't forget to log on to salemandbanks.com for the show notes for this episode as well.
Yes. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We can't even tell you how much we appreciate it. You guys are the best.
The biggest fucking crow just flew by your window.
Oh, really?
And I swear to God, I was like, is that the bat? Like,
Maltazar!
Maltazar!
Away!